Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome this afternoon to the Government Operations Committee meeting, calling this to order at 1 p.m. today on April 9th, 2024. Madam Clerk, do you mind doing a roll call?
Congressman Keane.
Present.
Congressman Maker.
Here.
Congresswoman Redcorn.
Here.
Congresswoman Rebard.
Here.
Second Speaker Shaw.
Present.
Chair Lemon.
Present. Thank you, Madam Clerk. We do have a quorum. Next on our agenda is the prayer. And Congressman Keane, will you render us an afternoon prayer?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day. We ask that you please just watch over our mourners, just lay your healing hand on them in the days ahead. We ask that you just guide us and give us wisdom to make the best decisions for Osage people. And we ask that if anyone has any burdens, spoken or unspoken, to just please give them peace. In your name we pray, amen.
Amen. Thank you, Congressman King. All right, committee, next we have number 4, approval of minutes.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Second Speaker.
Thank you. Motion to approve the minutes of April 2nd, 2024 as presented.
Second.
A motion with a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say yes.
Yes.
Yes. Opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. The minutes have been approved as presented. Thank you, Second Speaker. All right, next we have number 5, which is follow-up. On the Heritage Center safety and security status. The reason I put this on here is because at one of our very first government operations meetings, we had a discussion about the current status of the working conditions in the heritage slash cultural slash language building, however everybody calls it different things. And so, and Secretary Big Horse did not have the opportunity to wasn't because of some technical difficulties with the audio, we weren't able to hear from Secretary Big Horse. And since then, we've also received a report from Mr. Johnson that was asked for by this committee from a restoration and remediation group. And so I just want to make sure everybody has received that report from PSS. I can't remember exactly. PCC, that's right, PCC, I'm sorry, PSS, like, I apologize. So it talks about in there, in that particular report. So we have also Secretary Johnson on the line, and we also have Ms. Danielle Cass on the line. So thank you all for being here concerning this, and it looks like we have Ms. Selena White also on the line from the Language Department. So welcome, everyone. If the committee doesn't have any questions, as I'd like to give Mr. Big Horse and Mr. Johnson a chance to kick this discussion off. And Mr. Big Horse, when you come to the podium, you just have to make sure and hit the green button. And then if you see this and you can hear yourself in the speakers and you're live. There you are.
All right. Thank you for the time for, you know, letting me come and speak this afternoon. So, you know, this all began back whenever the freeze hit. We all know about the freeze, and it caused the, you know, a lot of damage to the cultural heritage center, as we all call it nowadays. And so after the big thaw hit, water started, you know, draining throughout the building, and pipes unfroze, which caused a bunch of flooding that went on, you know, within the building. And so at that time, like we're saying, you know, Casey and Danielle, she's called the property coordinator for Tribal Works, got to work on it, and they got a hold of the insurance companies and got a hold of a restoration company. They got a hold of a company to come and check on, you know, tested the mold. And we all know, you know, the outcome of the insurance liability was tremendous. And everybody was in agreement that you know, the building just wasn't worth saving. You know, it's just, it served its purpose. Been in there since 2004. And I've been here on numerous occasions visiting with Congress about the building. And so we all know the shape of the building. And but maybe, you know, it's a God's blessing that it's going to be tore down. But in the meantime, you know, PCC, actually it's called Professional Carpet Cleaning Company. They're the ones doing the restoration. They're the ones that that's in charge of decontaminating all the equipment and things that's inside of the building. That's their job. I understand that they've done a lot of work within the Osage Nation on restoration of other facilities and stuff. And it's an Osage-owned business. And so I understand that they've been used many times throughout the nation, and I understand they do a good job. So that's their part. And there is a company called EarthTech that actually come in and did the mold testing. And they're the ones that come up with, you know, the analysis about what's safe and what isn't safe. And the cultural center, language department was both shown what was possibly, or not possibly, but shown what areas they should be utilizing and not utilize. So they taped off the part that should not be utilized. And as we know, the cultural center packed up and they moved out immediately, and they moved out to the strategy center outside of town here. And the language department, I'm almost positive that they had an option. They had two options, but they found a building that they wanted to utilize in town. And they was working with the building owner up until about 2 weeks ago. They were working on a contract, trying to get the contract fulfilled, and it was going back and forth from the attorney general's office back to the building owner, you know, back and forth. They finally, it finally fell through, and that was just 2 weeks ago. So they've been going back and forth with that for some time. So that's why they haven't moved. Actually, they wanted to be in that building. So here we are. They are going to move into a trailer house, a trailer out at Harvest Land, which they, my understanding through Braxton, I've been in contact with Braxton since the beginning of this. Him and I, we work together all the time. I've talked to him probably every other week, you know. So we've been working on this. And so we thought that they was going to move into the building. He thought they was going to move into the building. But like we said, it didn't happen. So now they're going to go ahead and move into the facility out at Harvest Land. They were having a septic issue, and it's supposed to be completed, fixed by this week. And there's already been arrangements made with properties to get all their stuff moved out, what they're going to take with them, moved out to that facility out at Harvest Land. And they've also got another option. We're hoping that the PRT building, the new facility, is going to be, I think it's going to be done in June. That's what I understand. I'm not really positive on that. But when they move out of there, possibly be a second move, and they're going to move up on the fourth floor in the bank building. So it's pretty muddy out there at the Harvest Land. You know, the roads aren't in best condition, you know. So I think that would work out, you know. Good for them. I wouldn't mind even having an office up on the fourth floor of the bank building. It's a really nice place. So that's the situation. And, you know, I would never have any of our employees in a unsafe situation. Not at all. Or a hazardous or a facility that's dangerous, you know, I would never do that. But, you know, the situation is we have the report. I'm going off of what the experts say. I'm not an expert in restoration of mold, and that's my story, and that's what I know. And but I do know, Selena called us this while ago and said that they are going to have kind of an IT issue for now. They're trying to get the fiber optic line ran over to the Harvest Land building. It's set up for IT. They've already had it in there, but there's some kind of a issue that I don't know all the specifics to. But they are working with Sean Cass and putting in some utilizing some hotspots where they can work from that area. So
thank you, Mr. Big Horse. So I just have one question. Mr. Johnson had mentioned when you weren't able to get online mm-hmm. and audio that initially when this first happened, mm-hmm. that the individuals that were within the facility, in mm-hmm. in the building, had options to choices to make to either leave, to go to tour. There was some other, could you share with us what those options were?
That was the two options that I knew of. Well, like we said, was the strategy center or the facility out to the harvest land. But the way it was looking at the strategy center, it was going to be pretty congested, you know, so people, a lot of people there, and they didn't want to use that option.
So the reason to stay, they made the decision to stay, was it after we received this report, the PCC report?
I'm pretty sure it was. I mean, yeah, because Danielle, I was in contact with Danielle whenever they were working on the appraisal part of the, you know, the building insurance part of it. And so, yes, I'm pretty sure it was.
Okay, thank you. Committee, Congressman King.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Big Horse, for coming. I guess this is more a question for the executive branch, but so I was in an orientation 2 weeks ago in the law building up on the hill. And what you notice right away in those buildings, there's a lot of empty space, actually, in mm-hmm. those new buildings we have up there. Mm-hmm. Has there been any kind of studies done to maybe, you know, get you guys somewhere, I guess, in there while we wait for new? Or, like I said, this is maybe aimed at the executive branch, so...
Has that
ever been brainstormed out? Thank you.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to talk over you. I heard about that about a week ago from Secretary Johnson, that there was some HR has 3 or 4 or 5 offices in there that could possibly be utilized.
Yeah.
I would say that's an option. We could get some more information from Mr. Secretary Johnson if he's on the line.
Thank you, Mr. Big Horse. Mr. Johnson, did you want to respond?
To my knowledge, Human Resources has 2 offices. There are conference rooms in those buildings where the language department are currently providing their classes. Mm-hmm. I've also talked to Miss Addie today and told her if she needs more room, they could utilize those for classes because those aren't during the work hours. I've had... I wouldn't call them complaints, but on several different occasions, it's been spoken to me that different departments within those buildings have clients that come in and they utilize those spaces for privacy. And when we fill them up with people in temporary positions for offices, it starts congesting everything. I've had a complaint from the Veterans Committee. They didn't have a conference room because it had people in it at one time. So I made the decision last year sometime, we will no longer use those conference rooms for office space. We will do our best to find space elsewhere if something like this happens. And we did. Again, both departments were offered space. One department chose to look on their own for a building to lease, which Mr. Big Horse referred to. I agreed to that. I told him, yeah, we can lease the building. That's no problem. We'll just use your space costs. Instead of paying us, we'll use that to pay the lease. And that's we would actually have, I believe, saved money. Currently, we're saving some money on the lease at the Business Development Center because the lease cost there is actually lower than what our space cost is. However, that was actually last week that Braxton, I met with Braxton and Mr. Big Horse. It was early last week. And discussed it, and we were getting IT ready to put drops in and some other things. And it wasn't 10 minutes after that meeting was over, Ms. Red Eagle emailed me and said the gentleman with the lease backed out. So we were going ahead and moving forward with the trailer option, which I was told that the language department found acceptable. We were going ahead with the getting that thing up and ready to go because Dr. Heyman wanted to use it anyway. There was an issue with the septic system. I couldn't get a plumber in last week to get it done. It's supposed to be done today. I saw them working on it yesterday. Mr. Zahn is checking on it right now to see what the status is. We've sent, I have sent emails for Tribal Works and IT to prep this week to start moving the language folks out by the end of the week, hopefully. And I talked to Van this morning about what we need to do to get ready to actually demo that building, thanks to the appropriation that y'all got for a new multi-purpose office building. And I want to get onto that as fast as possible. So there you go. That's pretty much the entire story in a nutshell.
Thank you, Secretary Johnson. Congressman King.
Yeah, thanks for the information, Secretary Johnson. And just to clarify, I didn't suggest moving him up there permanently, but just, you know, just for a, like a temporary contingency type situation. So thank you. Thanks again.
Committee, any questions or comments at this point? Congresswoman Rebar?
Yes, thank you, Chair. So from the report, then everything that's been identified, the mold and what have you, has been addressed, I guess. Putting something up, and I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm kind of glad that this is going on. I agree that that building needs to come down, but I just, you know, I think the main concern of the committee was safety for our folks and definitely our elders. And, you know, if we could be mindful of ADA compliant, being ADA compliant, that's kind of hard right now. I don't know if it is at the Heritage Center, or I mean out at the Heritage Harvest Land, sorry. But I know this has been a tough situation because everywhere that's just full. I think that's smart that we're looking at the bank building, but it's not nice up there either.
Yeah.
It's kind of real bougie, honestly. It's just moving you from one. Yeah. Well, actually, the language program's less bougie than upstairs, I'd pretty much say. I don't know if you've been up there in a while, but out of all of this, at least we're getting some movement and can move forward. I just want everybody to feel safe and be in a good environment. I'm glad you guys were looking at, you know, the conference rooms at the Welcome Center. And I agree that that's not in my purview, most certainly, but the HR office is probably one of the offices that has the most space. They actually have eight offices, eight areas. They've got a conference room, two or three out in the front. They've got a huge copy room and a reception area. They've got two, three, four offices. And I think there's only a couple of people working there. I'm just saying that maybe revisiting that idea, because those conference rooms are right there. I think there's, I don't know, maybe two or three people in HR now. I think they're third party contracting that out a lot now.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's Jessica and Aaron and Julio, and I don't know if anybody else is there. But then again, I've been in there several times, but I don't know exactly how many offices are in there, you know, but I will do whatever we need to do.
It seems like, at least, Chair, that everything that we address, and I thank you for the report, because, you know, we want to make sure that our folks are safe. But you mentioned something, Secretary Bighorst, about the insurance. So I was just wondering, since Danielle's on the line, or Ed, if we could get an update. Was there a claim filed with the building? Or are we going to look at getting anything back for that, or?
Yipa homizing.
Ms. Cass, would you like to speak to the insurance question?
We have filed a claim on the Heritage Center. Keep in mind that this would be two different types of claims. One would be the pipes bursting, meaning a flood claim that happened on the cultural side, and then back on the language side is surface water entry, and it caused the mold claim. So that will be a different type of claim. So there would actually be two different types of insurance claims moving forward.
Thank you, Ms. Cass. I appreciate that update. All right, committee, any further questions?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. Johnson, go ahead.
Yeah, this is, you know, just general, hopefully useful information for everyone, you know, including at your own house. So just because mold is black in color doesn't mean it's black mold. Secondly, medical doctors, and this isn't me, this is doctors saying this kind of thing, mold really only hurts, well, not hurts, but affects people severely if they have allergies and asthma. So that's when it becomes seriously bad. We're breathing stuff right now. You walk outside and I can't tell you how much junk you're breathing into your lungs. So I just want to make sure everybody knows that, you know, yeah, mold, it is bad. I wouldn't want to sit around in it. I mean, Addie brought her file cabinets up here and me and Jeannie been sneezing ever since. So there's something attached to them, but whatever. It is not nearly as bad as most people think when you hear that. So, and that's just an FYI. And again, the color of mold really doesn't determine which type it is. So you really have to have that kind of stuff checked. And anyhow, that's just all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Mr.
This
Johnson.
Is Selena. Can I make a comment about that mold real quick?
Certainly. Just give me a moment, please.
One moment. Okay.
Thank you. So I appreciate the comment, Mr. Johnson, concerning mold. We don't have subject matter experts sitting here or on a panel at this moment to tell us about the types that we do or don't see. And it is true, if you guys notice on your phones, on a health perspective, you look at the air quality index from your phone on your weather app. The last few days that, you know, the last couple of weeks it's been around here, the air that we have been breathing is so detrimental to us because of all the fires that are around here. It's not good for folks that aren't necessarily healthy or that are immunocompromised or have other problems. But relatively healthy people can deal with and can accept and be around those types of situations. But we don't want anyone to even have to look at mold. I don't think anyone here wants that to even be a thing. I learned the hard way in the sense that I had a daughter who was at college and there was mold on the vent coming out of the ceiling for her air conditioning. And of course we were concerned. That's when I learned a little bit more on a scientific level to what Mr. Johnson was speaking about. And I had to educate myself on types of bacterias and types of molds and things that are in the air. It's just like we have good bacteria and bad bacteria. It's just like if you talk about fungus, mold, you know, there's good and there's bad. And so we have, and I'm not saying this mold is good. I'm not saying that. I apologize. There is a loud noise outside. So yeah, committee, there's a car going by with major bass. Okay. Wow. Okay. Anyways, unless we get a subject matter expert, you know, we don't really know what we're breathing. And we do know that pollutants are around us in all areas, and we're not trying to downgrade anything. It's just important that we have addressed it, that we're looking at it, that there has, and that we have a plan in place. And yes, Ms. Selena White, you may have the floor.
The only comment that I wanted to make is, while yes, this mold may not be dangerous or not, we don't know. The employees of the Heritage Center, we've not been provided the report. The only people that are having to breathe in mold for continuous months on end or years, because we don't know how long it's been here, is the employees of this department. And there are people that work here that are asthmatics. There are people that work here that have health issues. I just want to make that known, that no other human in the Osage Nation is breathing in the mold air except for the people at the Heritage Center. So it may not seem scary or dangerous or deadly to people, but it's a little bit different when you're having to sit in it every single day and you know that part of your office is dangerous. That's all I want to say.
Thank you for that comment, Ms. White. And that's exactly why we're here today, revisiting the situation so that we can have a understand the plan that's in place. So we do appreciate everybody's time concerning this particular topic. And do we have a report from all of our buildings about all the mold? I mean, that's just a question that, because we don't know. I'm not saying anybody should do it. I'm just saying, do we have an actual report from every building that we have?
Congresswoman okay. Lemons,
yes.
If I could weigh in just
you,
a minute.
You may, Ms. Cass, go right ahead.
We utilize EarthTech that does all of the mold testing. They test the outside air around the building as well as the inside air. Now, with this building in particular, it does have a few different types of mold. Those, the areas that are affected are taped off. PCC is coming out today to tape off another area so the employees are not going back into the area. With that being said, once they have started moving stuff out of the front of the offices, we can build our cleaning chambers with inside there and move equipment into cleaning chambers to clean them and then move them into a safe area where they could be moved out of the building. Because all of the items, furniture, equipment, anything like that will go through a cleaning process. That way other areas cannot be cross-contaminated with the mold. But also I wanted to let you guys know that we are filing for the depreciation on the building in the insurance claim so that we will receive a portion of what the building is worth currently on the insurance claim, and that could help possibly pay for the demo or other areas that we're having to, you know, work on throughout this process.
I appreciate that technical update, Ms. Cass. Thank you very much. All right. Are we ready? Oh, yes, Congressman Maker.
Yeah, I just have a real quick question. How many employees are left in that building now?
Ms. White, Selena, could you give us that answer? Is it 10 or what?
Ms. White, how many employees are at the Heritage Center at this moment right now, working from the Heritage Center, not working from home?
Working from the Heritage Center and not working from home are 8.
Thank you, Ms. White.
Yeah, thank you.
You good? All right, Mr. Bighorst, thank you for your time.
Thank
I appreciate
you, Chair.
It.
I appreciate you.
I appreciate you coming down.
And thank the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. So the next one on our agenda is item number 6, but without objection, I would like to move down to number 7, which is ONCA 2450. And the reason I want to do this is because we can put number 6 and number 8 together, which has to do with the AG's office also. It just seems to flow better. So I do apologize for not numbering my agenda in that way. I would like to jump down to number 7 if there's no objection from the committee. No objection? Great. Thank you. All right. So number 7 is ONCA 2450, an act to amend ONCA 22-28 to include all pre-construction activities for the Heritage Center as part of the appropriation and to establish an alternate effective date. The sponsor is Congresswoman Rivard, and I believe we have all of the executive parties here that we need to discuss this particular bill, which follows greatly behind what our discussion that we just had. So, Congresswoman Rivard, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Appreciate it. And thank you, Secretary Bickhorst, for joining. So last week, I believe it was, myself and Congressman Bickhorst had a meeting with the Office of the Chiefs, and we met with Kaihika, Mr. Webb, Julie O'Keefe, Chad Renfro was there, of course, myself, Van Casey, Miss Catherine Redcorn, Miss Marla Braxton, and we had a meeting to discuss where we are with the build of the museum expansion and also our Heritage Center. So if you've been following along, anyone, then you'll see that in another bill that went through that Congressman Bickhorst and myself had sponsored and co-sponsored for the $2 million that Secretary Johnson mentioned for the temporary build. That went through Congress. That was funded to address that issue of that site, that building. So as you've heard, they're going to demolish it. And then we'll put up the temporary for those folks. But at the same time, we still have to address the need for a heritage center that will include our language, culture, historic prez, and rooms for the tribal advisory committee folks to meet and things of that nature. We're at the conception piece of drawing on both the museum and the heritage center. As you guys know, we have, I think there's been maybe three bills filed. Wait, I definitely know since I've been here, the Heritage Center. And also there was a bill filed for the museum, but the museum also has a revolving fund. And I don't know what the balance is there. I think the Treasurer Batson is looking for those balances or that information. What we did when we met was to try to look at the big picture and look at where we're at and where we're going. In that, they had requested that we amend the original bill, if you can see 2228. What we're asking to do, does not cost us anything, is to include the verbiage of pre-construction activities. And that's all we did in the title because they were moving forward and stopped because that language wasn't there. There is a balance in the appropriation that we had provided to them. I think it was $600,000, and they have a balance. I think it's around $500,000. They have that available, but they don't want to utilize it because the language didn't specify for that use and purpose. So that's all we're doing, is cleaning up the language so that they could utilize the funds. And that's what one of the pieces that came out of the meeting. I feel like when we talk in commerce with the foundation, that it'd be also a good time to talk about what they're going to be doing moving forward with the museum. But I didn't want to use this to have that big discussion yet, but to introduce it. I think it's important that this committee and Congress understand where we're going with this, and we understand that we have a need to expand our museum and address the Heritage Center. Secretary Bickhorst and I have been part of this, not a want, it's a need, since probably 2003. And so here we are almost 20 years later. And I feel like it's going to come to life and to fruition. And it was a really good, positive meeting. And I feel like I'm just asking that the committee allow us to amend the language into this bill so they could utilize the monies properly.
Thank you, Congresswoman Rivard. Members of the committee or Congress, any questions or comments? Any comments from any guests? All right, any action?
Chair, I'd like to make a motion to send ONCA 24-50 to Congress with a due pass recommendation.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed? Hearing no opposed, ONCA 24-50 will be reported to Congress with a due pass recommendation. Okay, if I could just have one, about 30 seconds here. All right. Thank you, Congresswoman Rivard, and thank you, committee. Mr. Bighorse, appreciate your time. And Mr. Johnson, I appreciate your time also. And we are going to move on to, I'm going to talk to Ms. Second Speaker Shaw about which one she'd like to go into first. Do you want to do the committee substitute? Or do you want to do your 2447, or would you prefer to jump down to 2451 to get that out of the way and then focus on 2447? It's up to you.
Thank you, Chair, so much. 2447 is fine.
Okay, great. So 2447 is an act to repeal and replace the Victims' Right Law of the Osage Nation and to establish an alternate effective date. Congresswoman Shaw is the sponsor. Ma'am, you have the floor.
Thank you so much, Chair. I'd like to make a motion to adopt the committee substitute for ONCA 2447, dated April 9, 2024, timestamped 1:06 p.m.
There's a motion and a second to adopt the committee substitute. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say yes.
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 Any opposed? Hearing no opposed, the committee substitute has been adopted for ONCA 2447. So then when we left this particular last discussion, there was a few changes that we had wanted to see. And so I guess my question was going to be, I've looked through a few of them so far because I notated them. Do we just want to jump to those particular sections that we talked about? And has anything else been changed in the committee substitute that we didn't talk about in committee prior?
Thank you, Chair. So from my understanding, my discussions with the AG, everything's been addressed that we identified in our last meeting, except for, if you guys recall, we had a discussion about the time frame needed for the Supreme Court, Osage Nation Supreme Court, and AG Patterson said that he's waiting for a response from Chief Justice in order to make that change. But my suggestion is that we go ahead and move forward with the changes that we do have. AG Patterson, if you'd like to, or Ms. Wynn, if you'd like to speak on that, please do.
So speak on the waiting for the yes. notation or the correspondence back from the Chief Justice.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, because we could do, and I think where you're going is that if we were to move this today after if we look through all of the changes that were recommended, mm-hmm. that we could make an amendment on the floor if we need to do something like that.
It's, yes,
if with we that the one information situation. At that point. Yes. Yes, ma'am. Okay, Mr. Patterson.
That was it. Couldn't have said it better myself. That's exactly what I intended and hoped that you would do.
Okay, so on those days, it was about giving the Supreme Court enough time, more time. And there was several other days in here that we also looked at that looks like they've been extended, that better fits what a court schedule would possibly look like.
That is correct. And the Supreme Court time for response on an appeal after a plea has been made is sitting at 10 days right now, and according to the Timekeepers Act, whatever, that'd be business days. So I just grabbed that, thought that'd be a reasonable amount of time. I sent the same to Chief Justice Drent and have not heard anything back. I think I sent that probably late yesterday afternoon. So, and if I do get a response, I'll let the sponsor know, and hopefully we can amend it at that time. If not, I think that's a time frame that they should be able to comply with.
All right, great. Thank you. So let's just, you know, I just want to work through each of the areas that we were looking at and just read it aloud again, and so that we can see the difference, because the definition of family has definitely been beefed up in this particular very first one.
Correct. Yes, we do. We can certainly do that if the committee desires to go through it again. I don't have them highlighted on this version.
I actually can pull them up pretty quick if you want me to read through them with that. And I can tell you the page number in the section if that's what you'd like.
Yes.
Okay, committee. You're okay with that, Congresswoman Shaw?
Sure.
Okay, so we are on page 3 of the committee substitute that we received via our email, and we're going to go down to number 7. And I'm going to read what is in the committee substitute. Upon request, number 7, upon request, you know what? Let me back up. Section 5 is duty of the Office of Attorney General to victims. And number 7 under that is upon request to have the members of the immediate family, including a current spouse or domestic partner, a child or grandchild, a parent or grandparent, or a sibling or first cousin related by birth, adoption, marriage, or Osage tradition of any homicide victims afforded any applicable services under this section, whether or not the person is to be a witness in any criminal proceedings. So I think our last discussion was, you know, how do you define family?
Correct.
And this just gives us a lot of particulars. So committee, is there any discussion concerning this insertion and change that's been made? Any members of Congress that want to speak up? All right. We good? Okay, so it looks like the next one is going to be, and please correct me if I'm wrong. Okay, page 5, section 6 of the committee substitute. All right. This was an interesting one here. Hang on. Okay, I'm going to read it. It's section 6, duty of law enforcement of victims, and it's paragraph A. Upon the preliminary investigation of a crime, it shall be the duty of the officer who interviews the victim of such crime to inform the victim or responsible adult if the victim is a minor child or a person who has been adjudicated incompetent, or the family member who receives death notification in the case of a homicide, in writing of their rights as a crime victim. So I believe that the word adjudicated has been inserted. Mr. Patterson, would you like to speak to that?
Yes, Chair. Adjudicated, we put that in there to indicate that it has been a ruling by a court as opposed to an Osage who has voluntarily declared himself incompetent.
Thank you so much. Is there any questions or comments concerning that insertion of adjudicated? Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Patterson. So I'm going to just keep going through these. So then I have page 7, I believe, guys. Let's go down here to section 8, best efforts to accord rights. And then it goes down to D. And this is where the time frame we were talking about. It did say 72 hours. So, Mr. Patterson, can you hang on? And was it number
3?
Number 3? It is totally different. Okay, so I'm going to read the D, and then I'll jump down to 3. So thank you, committee. D, motion for relief and writ of mandamus. The rights described in this chapter shall be asserted in the Osage Nation trial court in which a defendant is being prosecuted for the crime, or if no prosecution is underway, in the district court where the crime occurred. Number 3, the Osage Nation Supreme Court shall take up and decide such application within 10 days from the petition, within 10 days after the petition has been filed. So this is the area where it did say 72 hours. Correct.
Yeah, that's the one we discussed previously to diving into here. I changed the 72 hours to 10 days and send it to Chief Justice Drent and waiting on a response.
Okay, perfect. All right, I'm just going to make a notation concerning that particular area. All right. Then we have number 5. This also was a change. It looks like in no event shall proceedings be stayed or subject to a continuance of more than 30 days to enforce this chapter. It was 5 days prior, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so we increased it to 30 days. That's the only change that's been made in this committee substitute. Okay, change to Thank you, committee. I'm just going to make a note here real quick. All right. Any questions or comments concerning that? All right. Let's jump down to E. I believe that you wanted to, Mr. Patterson, you wanted to remove district from E. Error. In any appeal in a criminal case, the Attorney General may assert that the court denies any crime victim's right in the proceeding to which the appeal relates is an error. So in front of court, you had district, and now that's been removed.
Correct. We refer to the tribal court as the trial court, but I think just removing district will broaden it enough to it applies to any court.
Okay. Committee, any questions or comments concerning that? I don't have it in mind. It's the one that's, it has a new timestamp on it. I'm looking at the one that does not have district court in it. And the timestamp is what, Congresswoman Shaw, again?
The correct timestamp is 1:06 p.m. Today's date, April 9th, 2024.
Are we good now? Okay. Great. Thank you, though. I mean, because somebody following along might be thinking that we're doing something wrong. All right, great. Now we've gone to, it looks like F. Okay, Mr. Patterson. I don't think I took very good notes. Oh, this is the one where we thought everything had to be rehauled, A, B, and C. So what do we do here?
Okay, this is where the victim has, this gives the victim right to reopen a plea on certain circumstances. Originally, when we were going through it line by line, I got lost in the fact that it gave the victim too much rights to open a plea, but it's actually limiting the victim in only certain cases that a plea can be reopened. And so it said, or... We were going back and forth on the or and the and on B. And we said, I initially thought, well, that should be or because you should be able to do it under all three circumstances. But no, you should only be able to do it if all three circumstances exist, which is limiting instead of opening the victim's rights.
So in looking at F to A, B, and C, it has to be applicable to all three, A, B, and C, because we inserted the word and we decreased the time from 10 days to 5 days. Is that correct as far as when they can file their appeal with the Supreme Court?
Well, I thought 10 days and four, it said 10 and 14, that's a long time frame to be able to.
Right, so we did, this is new. The 5 days is new also.
Yes, it is.
Okay, I'm gonna read this out just so that that means that all three of these have to be in place in order for a victim to be able to file an appeal. Did I say that correctly, sir?
To reopen a plea, yes.
To reopen a plea.
Once the victim's pled, in order for the, once the defendant has pled, in order for the victim to go back in and be able to reopen that plea, these things have to be present.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson, for correcting me because, you know, legalese is something that I'm not definitely familiar, great with. So this, I'm just gonna read these three really quick. A victim may make a motion to reopen a plea or sentence provided A, the victim asserted the right to be heard before or during the proceeding at issue, and that right was denied. B, the victim petitioned the Osage Nation Supreme Court for a writ of mandamus within 5 days of the denial. And C, the accused did not plead to the highest offense charge during any plea negotiations. Okay, so we're going to have to do a little Scribner's error there on your committee sub. We have Annie during Annie. So you might mark that down, Ms.
Thank you, sure will.
Shaw. So it gives the victim the right to open a plea, but it doesn't just give it free rein to just to open the plea just without all three of these being applicable.
That's correct. You must have had to apply your right at the trial court level, that right has been denied, and you already appealed that right to the Supreme Court.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Okay, unless I missed something, those are the only changes that I had notated that we were looking at in a committee substitute. Does the committee have anything? Anybody else? Second Speaker Shaw?
Those are the only changes that I've noted as well.
Congresswoman Rivard.
Yes, I was talking to Ms. Riley, who frightens me as an assistant AG. Yeah. But, you know, after we talked about this last week, something that I was thinking is, you know, I think this is very such an important bill. Again, thank you, Second Speaker Shaw, for taking this on. But with regards to victims, I just wanted to ensure that this also is a voice for those victims that are deceased due to domestic violence. You know, no, I understand it's not retro. I understand that. I was not speaking to my own personal and my family right now that's going on. But what I'm saying is I always want to make sure that we, since we have the sovereign right to do this, are the voice of those victims that cannot speak because they're dead. And that's very near and dear to my heart. And I just want to make sure that this law is their voice and allows them to have their family have the right or whomever to use our court and our attorney general's office to ensure that they have a voice, whether that be through the voice of their family members. Because if you're deceased, you don't have a voice. And I want to ensure that our words and our code help them have a voice, and that they have the family have a right to go and ask for relief.
Thank you, Congresswoman Rivard. Mr. Patterson.
Yes, and this is an attempt to do exactly that. And just to what you were speaking to, Riley, Assistant Attorney General Riley Wynn and Staff Attorney Victoria Lefthand came up to me this morning and suggest that we change this to a survivor's bill of rights, and every reference to victim change that to survivor. And I thought that was a great idea, and I commend them for working towards something like that and making that suggestion to me. And I would make that to the committee right now.
So if the victim is, but you have, okay, so I don't have a problem. That's a wonderful idea. I'm wondering though if we need to, because you could have a victim though that's not deceased. So you kind of have to maybe include both.
You're always a survivor if you've been a.
I hadn't think about it like that. Thank you. I'm so glad that you. I was thinking, the finality of death, and so thank you. Yes, you are. You're always a survivor. We're survivors.
To be honest, I had the same reaction. I did. I said that implies somebody's terminated, but no. Yeah, they've straightened me out since then.
Well, you're still a victim too, even if you're still alive. You were victimized.
Yeah. So and you survived the crime.
Right. So that's a great. I mean, I like that idea, Congresswoman Shaw and
Chair.
Then Congresswoman Rebar. Yes.
Thank you. I absolutely love that idea. If we want to take a short recess, I can get with Trey and change that.
We absolutely.
I think it's appropriate.
So sorry, Second Speaker. We absolutely have the time. And so without objection, we'll recess for 10 minutes. Is that enough?
Yes,
15. Without objection, we're going to recess for 15 minutes. Thank you.